Welcome to Guy Aitchison's Reinventing the Tattoo Community, where tattooers, apprentices, collectors, and the curious are all invited to come to share, inspire each other, and ultimately learn more and get better tattoos and better artworks. This is a very special show. We've got the history of tattoo conventions with Alex Van Dutch from the World Tattoo Events, and he'll be interviewing Mickey Valletta of many talents, but the of note here, the London Tattoo Convention, beloved by hundreds of thousands, if I don't even know, it's a legendary, amazing show. And it's going to be great to talk to him about the history of tattoo conventions. You might be watching this on Facebook or YouTube, not really sure where, but the main places where you could always get the latest live programming and replays will be in the App Store. Pick your devil, either the Google Play Android Store or the Apple App Store. If you do a search for Reinventing the Tattoo, give it a download, then you will be able to stay up to date. The events link is the first link there. It's got the schedule. And there's a lot of participatory events also. So not only do we have all of the live interviews like this and the replays, there are art jams, there's drawing groups that happen regularly. It's pretty awesome. Click that events button. You could also go straight to community.reinventingthetattoo.com to log in from your computer, and then you have just your ISPs writing you out, not necessarily your phones. Anyways, let's see. The goal, ultimately, the goal isn't to get you addicted to your phone. It's to keep everyone inspired and learning from each other. So, we're very excited. Let me get through the rest of this. If you are checking it out on YouTube or Facebook, you do wanna you could go to the Reinventing the Tattoo YouTube channel. It's brand new and fresh, so it would be awesome if you can follow it and then share it around a little bit. And I guess we won't be asking for that for much longer, but we want to. Other upcoming events, there's a special one happening on March 20th. It's the Spring Equinox Art Jam. Android Jones is going to be beaming in some live visuals. You can kind of see this in the background. I'll play the teaser before we get into the show. And Aja Lu will be performing a live score, so you could paint along, draw along, just kind of watch. And we'll have two streams, one where you could engage other artists, and it's kind of like a group art stream, and then the other one where you could just kind of check out the show. And so we encourage you to get a big projector and really awesome speakers, but of course you could put headphones on and watch from your phone if you want to. Either way, go to reinventingthetattoo.com/equinox to get your free tickets. Let's see, real world shows that we will be at. Actually, we do have one planned in Brussels for November the 12th to the 14th. I believe there might be a trade show happening ahead of time, but we will be there setting up. And it'll be fun to be beaming in some of these online events into the conventions. We kind of always have, but this time it'll be the first time since the COVID smackdown. Okay, let's see, what else do we have? I want to thank our sponsors. And we'll get through these so we can get to the show. Loose Screw Tattoo in Richmond, Virginia, headed up by Jesse Smith, an awesome tattooer and entrepreneur, tattoo shop owner. The whole crew there is very talented. They will inspire you. They're wicked busy. Black and gray, color work, just show up with a great attitude and a willingness to learn. Let them know that you found out about it from Reinventing, and they'll kind of know that you're on the same level. Or not the same level, you're on the same path, whatever. Point being, loosescrewtattoo.com. Click join the team. Let them know that we sent you. We've got Raw Pigments. Rawpigments.co is an ink company out of California, I believe. They have access straight to the Raw Pigments. And yeah, check out their story, rawpigments.co. We're very happy to have them on board. And we've got, Inkjet Stencils. If you are preparing your stencils on the computer or your app, then using their system with the Inkjet ink and a eco-friendly continuous ink printer, I believe they use a lot of Epsons, then you can print out your stencils straight from the printer. You can check out how to get 5 free samples and a couple of webinars on what their system's about on the app. There's a whole sponsor section, Inkjet Stencils, and there's actually a system where they could print out a full back piece straight from the printer. Andre Malcolm's a sick tattooer out on the West Coast now. He's printing out full back pieces and sleeves and shit and all in one spot. Okay, I want to thank our affiliates, Fireside Tattoo Network and ecofriendlytattoosupplies.com. And then we are going to check out this video, and on the coming back. We'll catch up with Mickey and Alex. It's going to be pretty amazing. And yeah, Mickey's got so many awesome projects in the works and that to talk about and going on. I am wicked excited to hear about them and tell you, you'll hear about them. Okay, so let me throw this video on. It's a short one, but it's also interesting, and then we'll be back. Okay, let me click these buttons here and get out of the way. Thanks again. I'll be in the background to read off comments, possibly if there's ever a lull or at the end. And take it away, Alex.
Okay, Gabe. Thanks a lot for your introduction. And welcome, everyone, to the sixth edition of the History of Tattoo Conventions podcast, where we explore the history of tattoo conventions along with their organizers. So today I'm very excited because we have on board what's considered the organizer of the best tattoo convention on the planet, which is the London Tattoo Convention, and Mr. Mickey Bialetto. And Mickey is also one of the most renowned publishers in the world. And so Mickey, welcome aboard today. And the first thing I would like to ask you is, how are you and how are you dealing so far with this pandemic these days?
Hi, Alex. Thank you for inviting me. Well, is like all Italian, we are right now in lockdown. But luckily, being a journalist, I can go to work every day in the office, so I keep myself busy. But yeah, it's been a very tough year here, and I guess all around the world.
Yes. But I hope you're doing good despite all the odds of the last few days, of the last, few months or year.
Yeah, everything is good. I mean, I'm working on many different projects and I only carry on my passion the best I can.
Yes. Mickey, let's talk a little bit about your background, where you're coming from. And my personal interest is where, you know, like, what's your story like in the early part of your life and where's your fascination for tattoos coming from?
Well, I think my first love sign with tattooing, I was around 8-9 years old. At the time, there was a very famous toy called a Big Jim from Mattel, but I never liked it, the good guy. I only loved the bad guy, and I was asking my parents for Christmas Dotto Steel. That was this toy, enemy of Big Jim, with a huge dragon tattooed on his chest. And the reason why I wanted the toys is exactly for the tattoo. So I always follow a tattooing since the first year of my life, and I always been fascinated by them. I got tattooed for the first time when I was 17 by Gianmaurizio Percioni. Always been in, when I was a teenager, into motorcycle and tattooing. And actually, this is why I started my whole career. I knew I wanted to spend my life traveling all around the world. I knew I was loving riding bike and tattoos. And because there was no job that could be good for me, because unfortunately I was not a good drawer. So I knew I could never be a good tattooer, and I never liked it to be mediocre in anything I was doing. So basically—
You wanted to become a tattoo artist initially?
No, because as I said, I was not able to draw. So okay. I never wanted to become, I could only become a mediocre tattooer. and I never wanted to be mediocre in anything I did in my life. So basically, I invented my job. I got the chance, I was in a discotheque in Milan, and I found a magazine, it was called In Town, it was a free magazine, and the publisher, it was put in article, I'm talking about beginning of the 90s, it was put in article about tattoos and piercing. So basically, I contacted him and I proposed him to go to do bike show and do photos and article about biker with tattooing. He liked the idea, and I never been a photographer, never been a journalist. I just
said. So at the time, you had no experience in that field, and you pitched him what you wanted to do. All right. And you also very young then.
Yeah, I was 19. I was 19 years old. So basically, he accepted because I didn't ask any money. I just asked money for the gasoline for my motorcycle. And I started to went around bike show, taking photo of bikers. I just bought a camera, a very tiny camera, not a professional one, just 1 week before I went to the bike show. And I was writing the article, he liked it, and he started to publish. And then I suggested to him, and I say, why we don't start to do a tattoo magazine? And this is how we started in Europe, in Italy first, Tattoo Review. After 3 years, we were already in four languages all over Europe. And after 5 years, under the name Tattoo Planet, also in America, Australia, all over the planet.
Yeah, I remember the Tattoo Review really well because these are the really first magazines I ever bought in 93. And I believe I still have all the numbers, 2, 3, 4, up to probably 30, 40 or something. Then I left Italy. So I was buying them in Italy. I remember how excited I was when I could buy those kind of magazines. So which to me opened an entire new world. So I'm also very grateful for you, to you for exposing me to a culture which otherwise I would have really no chance to see. And I really mean that. I'm really, really grateful because also what I'm doing now is also, well, thanks to you. So again, this is why I'm very excited to have you on board today.
I appreciate it.
So thank you. So you started this this magazine and after you've been working for this previous magazine, but what made you think that that could succeed? So at the time, how was the tattoo scene in Italy? There was not that much, as far as I can remember.
No,
like in the early
not
90s.
Really. Like when I got tattooed, I'm talking about, well, I was 17, so in 88. The only tattooer in Italy, I could even tell the name. There was only Gian Maurizio Percioni, Mino Spadaccini, and Marco Ruffa and Danielino in Milan. There was Francesco from Urban Cowboy in Verona, GP Rondinella in Rome, Marco Pisa in Bologna, not even Marco Leoni because at the time was in Brazil. There were really, really probably 10, 15 tattooer with a legitimate studio all over Italy. That was
in
the situation.
Early
90s. But I'm talking when I got tattooed in 88.
But 88, okay.
At the time, there started to be MTV, and MTV started to show all this video of rock band with tattooing in the video, like Guns N' Roses, Motley Crue, Iron Maiden. So more and more people were started to be fascinated by tattooing. So it was a risk when the publisher I was working for decided to start the magazine, but it was, he liked the adventure because him actually was tattooed too by Herbert Hoffman. In the 70s. He was, before being a publisher, he was a musician. He traveled all over the world. He used to be in a kind of a famous band in Italy. And so he liked tattooing too. This is why in the previous magazine, he was doing an article about tattooing. So he liked the idea and basically it was a big success.
Yeah, well, I can tell. And it's still going on today after 27, 28 years.
After 28 years, yes. After 7 years, he decided to, my ex-publisher decided to take some decision that I didn't agree, because at the time, there was a big thing like not advertising any tattoo supply in the magazine. There was this kind of ethic that only tattooer could buy tattoo equipment. So the tattoo scene
that would make sense.
And didn't support any magazine that were advertising tattoo supplies. But after 7 years, he was more interested in the money than in the art. So when he decided to do it, I didn't agree. I left the publishing company because I gave my word to so many people that I was not going to do that. And basically, he wanted to make money selling articles to tattoo artists, even if they were not good and everything. So I decided, instead of selling my soul and what I was believing, that maybe I could even fall, but I didn't want to sell myself. So I stopped to work for him. I've been all around Europe asking money for starting my publishing company. And luckily, John Lomax from Wildcat, that was the biggest European piercing company, knew me, believed in me, and gave me all the money I needed. There were around 200,000 euro to start my own publishing company. He bought basically advertising 5 years in advance. And he believed in me. And that was the way how I could make Media Friends, my own publishing company, and start to do what I wanted without having a boss tell me what to do.
That's an interesting story. So this is how Tattoo Life then started as well.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. Interesting, this one. I didn't know this part of your story. So at the time in between the early 80s and early 90s, were you already also visiting tattoo conventions? Because you were visiting bikers gatherings, but were they already tattooing, or did you
The first convention I ever been was in Milan in 88. It was a convention. At the time, I didn't know, but after I got tattooed, it was a convention organized by Gian Maurizio Percioni in a theater. And at the time, there was Oriyoshi Free, there was Bernie Luther, there were many, many high
old-timers
for the time. The only problem is that after one day, there was such a huge fight between skinheads, punk, and everything, but they had to close down the convention. But it was a fun one. And at the time, convention were not really a nice place like we used to be. Like 30 years ago, going to a tattoo convention could be a true adventure because also many tattoo artists used to set up their problem in convention. And so fights were not between even tattoo artists or between people, they were not so strange, to be honest. And after that, I've been in the first tattoo convention in Geneva. I think it was the 90. Of course, I was not working for the magazine because I started to work in 93. In the 90s, I went to this Geneva tattoo convention where for the first time, I got the chance to see really the best tattooer in the world at the time. There was Tenten, there was Mario Bartz, there was Bernie Luther, Bugs, all the huge names from the 90s were there. It was a very small convention, something like 45, 50 tattoo artists, not more than that. And it was
It's funny you mentioned Bugs. Sorry, I got my first tattoo by Bugs in 1996 in London. I found that thanks to your magazines, it took me 3 or 4 years to find the right tattoo artist I wanted to get tattooed from. And the only way I had it to find out was reading your magazines.
Yeah, at really the time it was the king of Celtic. In Europe, there were two guys doing Celtic. Was Mickey Sharps, that was an excellent master in this, and Bugs.
From Holland. Yeah, Bugs started doing also this more cubistic style.
Around the middle of the 90s.
Yeah, in fact, I got a 96 in that style.
Yeah, Bugs always amazed me because he was the king of Celtic. After from one day to the other one, he got bored about Celtic. He was not doing Celtic anymore, started doing instead, like you say, actually first he started biomechanics.
Yeah,
he was doing only biomechanics, but I
know
work for him.
So Lauro Paolini has a biomechanic piece from him, I think.
Yes. So after that, in fact, was not really one of the best, I have to say. He started this Cubist film that was something totally new at the time. And thinking that around the 93, 95, I think it was the time where more people were starting to experiment in things. I mean, we all remember Marcus Pacheco and his Cubism. And it was the beginning of people like Eddie Deutsch or Scott Sylvia, all the Bay Area, Grimy, yeah. Mike Davis, all these people that did the history of the Bay Area influenced all over the world. These were all tattoo artists started to explore what they could do with tattooing. It was very exciting time.
I remember part of it again, thanks to your magazine. So, and so even before you started working at your magazine already, you already knew then some of those artists which you've been working with. And at what point in time, because I know you have a very long lasting close relationship with Philippe Lou and his family, did that start around that time? And my curiosity is, what's the secret of this very long friendship? You know, what is it based on, besides a passion for tattooing, obviously, but you know what I mean? It's just personal curiosity.
Well, I can tell you how it started my connection with the Le family. I always knew, even before I was getting tattooed, who Philippe Le was, because I was in Italy. Actually, in all Europe, there were no tattoo magazine before I started Tattoo Review. It was the first European tattoo magazine. So every 2 months, I was riding with a motorcycle from Italy to Switzerland, because it was the only place where I could buy Outlaw Biker Tattoo Review and tattoo from Easy Rider. And in one issue of Outlaw Biker Tattoo Review, I was reading the interview that Jonathan showed it to the Le family. Mm-hmm. And so I was so fascinated by him. And one day at the Virgin store, I found one old book from Christopher Bresky, one of his first skin show. And it was full of photos of Philip. So for me, it was already, it blew my mind. It was one of the best tattoo art I ever saw in my life. So basically, long story short, when I started to get tattooed by Fercioni and hanging out in his studio and help him out and everything, he started to tell me story about the Le family. And I always see this family as a myth. When I started the magazine, Tattoo Review, I wrote them a letter because they never answered to the phone. The only way you could be in contact with them was like written letter.
So I was like paper letters.
Yeah. I was sending to them a free magazine, and I wrote a letter that I wanted to make an interview with them. Then I was traveling around Europe in convention. Loretta went to the post office. He called the office, and she said to my boss that she was not interested to do any interview. And if he wanted, we could just buy the right to use the one they did with Jonathan Shaw. So when I came back, I heard the news, and instead of being disappointed, I thought like, okay, that means I'm not interested enough for them. My work is not good enough for them. So basically, I wrote them a letter, say thanks for the phone call, and if it was not a disturb, I was going to continue to send them magazine every issue, and if a day they could find my work interested, then I was always happy to do the interview. And no answer. I was month passed by. I was traveling. I used to go a lot to visit Mick Tattoo from Zurich. Mm. And one day, Felix, I did an article about GP Rondinella. He sent me a poster of the Le family, and he wrote a fucking good issue. That's it. He didn't say, I want to meet you, I want to. He just say, very good issue, good job, etc., etc. So at one time I was going to see Mick sleeping in his place, etc. And he said to me, okay, next day I'm going to Lausanne to see Felix and Loretta. At the time, Philip and Titin, they were traveling between Japan and San Francisco. And so I said, okay, so if you go to Lausanne, I'm going home. And he said, no, you can come with me. So I explained to Mick what was my relationship with Felix, the phone call of Loretta, blah, blah, blah. And Mick said, no, they know you are with me and they want to meet you. So I went with Mick for the first time in Lausanne. I entered their old house, tattoo museum, tattoo studio, and the feeling, it was the first time I met Felix, it was shocking. When he shake my hand, I could really feel one of the most strong energy I ever felt in my life.
Wow.
So basically, after Loretta offered us some tea and everything, we were sitting, chatting. And after a few hours, Mick has to leave. So I getting up and I was saying hello to them as well. And Felix just looked at me and say, like, do you want to stay here some more days? What I can
some
offer
more days.
Is, what I can offer you can you is food, a place to sleep, and some joint to smoke, if you like. So I say, of course. And I stay there with them 1 week. And we start to talk so much, so about anything, about art, about tattooing, about any kind of thing. And since then, I start to go to visit Felix and Loretta, usually every 3 weeks. And I was staying there a few days, 1 week, just hanging out with them, and we start to work at the first article, and he start to teach me everything I know about tattooing. It was every time I was bringing new magazine, it was opening, I had to explain to him every single tattoo, why I choose that tattoo, what was what if was thinking about line, shading, color, what was good, what it was not bad. So he really training me. About
so he was one of your mentors then as well.
No, absolutely. It's been biggest mentor.
It's okay, been my so that explains mentor. A lot. And what time was this? Mid-90s?
Yeah, actually in 94.
94, okay.
Yeah.
So that's...
And since then, I've been close to them more and more till today. And I have to say that if I have to say thanks to two people for who I am now, it's for sure Gianmaurizio Percioni, that it was the first one that gave me all the love I had for tattooing, and for sure the family. I owe them everything.
That is a very, very interesting story to know. And so those are the people which then influenced you the most throughout you, you know, at least in the early part of your career. And well,
yes,
you do family until now then.
They give me so much strong ethic about tattooing. And this is what I carry till today. They teach me two things, ethic and the principle of meritocracy.
I know you are very, very fond on ethics. What is it that you think the tattoo artists from now are missing compared to what to when you started in terms of ethic?
Well, they're totally different generation. I think we cannot even compare the new generation with the previous one. The previous one, there were people that, yes, they loved tattooing, but more than everything, I think they loved the freedom that tattooing was giving them. In fact, if you see who were the tattoo artists at the time, they were bikers, they were people that always lived not a normal life. They were travelers like the Leff family, they were sailors like Gianmaurizio Percioni, they were different artists, but in a way, it was not only their art, but also their life. It was totally different. I'm thinking about Tenten, I think about Bernie Luther, I'm thinking about everybody. Nowadays, unfortunately, see that many people join tattooing not even knowing or thinking that tattooing will be what they will do for the rest of their life. Many times they see tattooing like a passage to something else. I see so many that they start to do tattooing thinking that in a few years, if I get famous in tattooing, they will work for a fashion designer or they're gonna do something totally different. So I don't think there is in many, I don't say to them all, of course, but in many, not the true love as there was 30 years ago.
For the culture of tattooing.
Yeah.
Mickey, let's talk a little bit about the London Tattoo Convention. How did you get started with the London Tattoo Convention, and how did you and when decide to build this convention?
What motivated
you to do it?
To build this convention around the beginning of the 2000s, that means 20 years ago.
At the time,
I was collaborating to help the Milan Tattoo Convention, and it was going to be a good success. But again, I was the artistic director, but I did not have the total freedom of doing what I wanted to do. So I knew already since many years Marcus Berryman, my partner that I did with together with him at the London Tattoo Convention. And we were starting to talk about doing a huge and international and a unique event in London. London, because I think with New York is one of the center of the world, is in Europe for sure is the most international city. So it was
for tattooing. Great. Also, you
for tattooing, yeah, but also in general, I think also for culture, I mean, music, everything. In London, in England, they come a few years before than the rest of Europe. So many different things. So, and also there is another point. I never wanted to go in another city where, of course, there was already a tattoo convention. It was something like, it was a big no-no for ethic. You could never go to another city where there was already a convention. So at the time, Paris, Tintin already did two conventions, two Mondial du Tatouage in Paris. Not the one, the big one he did lately, but I'm talking about two editions he did end of the 90s in a theater where there were the first time around 20 tattooers and the second time around 50 tattooers. So for me, Paris, it was already the city of Tintin, and like Berlin was the city of Weber, Amsterdam was the city of
Anki at the time.
Madrid for Mao. So the only place where they never did a real convention, just a small show one time, Lalardi, was London, because the biggest convention in England, it was Dunstable, but Dunstable was not London. It was, don't remember, I think, 70 kilometers north of London.
Yeah.
So basically,
in Reading.
Yes.
In Reading, there was also something going on, right? Yeah, from Reading.
Yeah, but as I say, in the city of London, there was nothing going on, especially also for, I think, also for the price, because London was everything always been so expensive, renting and everything. It was one of the most expensive city in Europe. So after talking for almost 2 years with Marcus, I realized that Marcus had a very good, he was a great vision. He loved tattooing, but especially he loved to do a great event, and he was not really interested about the money, because the last thing I wanted, it was a partner interested in money so that I couldn't do exactly what I wanted, because what I wanted to create was not just a tattoo convention. I wanted to create a cultural event that could give the opportunity to anybody that didn't know nothing about tattooing, enter the convention, and after 3 days, realize what was the potential of tattooing. And with this in mind, we never, ever thought about, okay, how much we're gonna spend, how much we're gonna take. In fact, for the first 5 years, London, every booth was totally for free for tattooers. There was no one tattooer that was paying the booth. It was just invitation. Everything was for free for tattooers. And so I could, that was my way to start to show to people that London is not a convention where you can buy a booth.
You either get invited
or you get in, the only way to be inside London was going to be invited. Thanks to all the connection I had since 15 years with the work I did with Tattoo Magazine and with the support of all the artists worldwide, I've been able to do great event in London, not only with the tattooer, but also with all the happening around it. Just it came in my mind, for example, think when, just to explain you how was Marco Berryman. I called him one day because I was talking with David Oropeza that did the movie Tattoo Nation. And I talked with him and said, hey, there is my friend from America that was the producer of this movie, et cetera, et cetera. It will be out in movie theater, but he gave me the chance to be the first one to show during the London convention. Can we put screen around the convention to show it? And, you know, Mark, what he did, he built a full movie theater inside the show.
To promote the movie, Tattoo Nation. Wow.
400 people that could go and see, of course, everything was for free, to see the movie going on every 2 hours. I mean, or with all the different exhibition we did and everything, it was not just related to, of course, the tattoo artists were the main focus, but we wanted to show also what was the potential of art related to tattooing, of photography, anything related to the art of the tattoo world. This is what we wanted to do. And this is why I think everybody starts to consider London such one of the best happening in the world. Also because world, huh? Every single artist that, if I'm thinking about who were in London, I mean, everybody from Ed Hardy to Philip to Emmy James to Kat Von D to you name it, and everybody was there.
All the best of the best was there. But what was your main methodology to choose the artist that you had in London?
I had three different methodology. First one, I was going to invite the one that make tattoo history. Like, I always invited people in all this year, like George Bond, that is a great artist, but there are now new kids better than him. Yes, of course, but George Bond did the history of tattooing, same as Lalardi, same as Vivi Lazonga, same as Sumac and Cameron, so many people that maybe their tattoo skill were not anymore the best of the world, but it was so important, the history they had in tattooing. So this is why they deserved a place there. Second, of course, I was invited the different tattoo legends that invented different style and been at the top of the game since over 30 years. So I'm thinking about Philip Lert and Tandy Carkinson, Don Ed Hardy and Chad Koblinger and many other. And then I was doing a very, that was the hard, the third way was the hardest, because I was doing a long research over a year to find out people that were not really well known, but they were extraordinary, unique. Like, I can think about, for example, Shige. When invited for the first time Shige in Milan and after London, nobody knew who Shige was.
Nobody knew that. Really, what time was that? Like,
end of the 90s.
End of the 90s. Okay.
End of the 90s, beginning of the 2000. It's just been, actually, there was not even social media at the time. I knew Shige because he went to Philip to get all his back and front done by Philip. And when I went to see Philip, he showed me some photo that Shige left to print for, I mean, that left to Philip. I saw his work and I was amazed and I invited him, but nobody knew who Shige was before. Same as Gatkin. When I invited Gatkin, was still working in... in Kyoto, in Japan. He was doing something a little bit different from what he's doing now, but totally unique. This is why I started to invite him, and then he became who he is. I could say the same thing about Nisako. Even Nisako, the first time he came in London, not many European or American knew who Nisako was, or I can go on and on with many names, from Julian Zibert to Marco, Antonio Tedesco, to, let me think about other people.
But yeah, for a lot of artists coming to your show will change the entire career. So you know, so to hear, because it will expose them to a very large audience.
Yes.
I mean,
in fact, this is, it came in the name. Another tattooer that nobody knew since I started to invite was Ching. Ching was totally unknown in Europe since I invited him. I was still working at East Tattoo since I invited him in Milan and then London. And I start to give more space to Chinese tattooer like Yan Zhu, like Duao Zhu, or like many other that start to become famous in London. In fact, it was funny to see that I was spending 1 year doing research for find all these artists. Then there were many tattoo convention organizers that were just coming in London and find all the new artists and invited them in their convention because they knew if they were in London, they were very special. Good artists. In fact, one thing I never look at, for example, and I never care about it, and I found always funny that people that were asking about London was writing this. I never care if a tattooer did a TV show. I never care if a tattooer had a million followers on social media. I never care. I say no to so many people with 700,000, 800,000 followers because... Their work, it was to me, it's just a lie using Photoshop and everything. And many times I invited people from Nepal with 3,000 followers. And for me, were much more interesting than the guy that has 1 million followers. So I always looked for choose the artists, people that were doing something unique. So I didn't care if they were famous or not through social media or through people. I never care about this. Maybe they could bring more people, visitor, but was not my point. And in fact,
I think that's very refreshing to hear from for a lot of organizers. You know, to don't only base on social media.
No, actually, I never care about social
artist.
Media. I never care. I always had my own way of judging. I never been influenced. If so many people wrote me, I've been in this TV show, I won Ink Master, and I answer, so what? I don't care.
Well, for a lot of artists, was it more important to be on a tattoo show or win the best of show in London?
I think for tattoo artists, well, especially the new one, it was really important to be already in London because being in London, it was a way to be granted to be a very good and top artist in the world.
It would open the doors to the rest of the world.
Yeah, because it was just a true recognition. In a world that there is not any more true recognition, because if you are a good-looking tattoo artist and you show your tattoo photo and then the photo of your butt in bikini and then you have 1,000 followers, not really for your work, but probably for the photo of your body. And so you cannot judge the quality of a tattooer through social media. And unfortunately, no. There is not anymore many ways that look just the good quality. Also because I saw thousands blog on tattooing that who do the blog doesn't really understand what tattooing is. But still, it follows the hype of the moment. So
I understand
it's very difficult
it, yeah.
to find somebody that has a way to judge tattooer and their work.
Well, if you have the skills to do so, you know, like you're able to recognize, you know, a very special artist or a very talented artist, That's a pretty special skill as well, that probably nobody has.
In this world since 30 years, always looking about meritocracy, knowing that even if you see something that many people can think is new, but you know where it comes from because you continue to keep informed, you know the history and everything. So it's very hard to invest in something new. But when NSC was coming, I was the first one to invite it there. And being in London was already a recognition. And then if they were going to win the best of show, it was a huge impact for them. I remember Julian Cibert, the first time he came in London, he was in the waiting list since 4 years. After 4 years of the waiting list, I said, yes, Julian, I have a place. He bring his customer, he tattooed for 3 days, the full chest. He did really an amazing piece. He win the best of show. And he always told me that it changed totally his life.
His life.
Totally. Totally. Okay. He passed from 1 month appointment to over 1 year and a half appointments.
So this is why, like, I met quite some artists, you know, which their biggest ambition was to come to London. And yeah, unfortunately, not everyone made it. And now they know why. I mean, you had a serious methodology to get them in. And I don't think there was any way around that.
No, because this is the same methodology I have in my magazine, I have in my blog, I have in everything I do. This is what Felix teach me. It was, I believe it, and what I will continue to do for the rest of my life.
For the rest of your life, yeah. And you mentioned before it was quite difficult to do in London because it was so expensive. But what would be like the biggest challenges to organize a convention in a place like London or in London in particular? I mean, it's I can imagine like in a place like this, it must be great for a lot of different factors. You say it's like it's in the center of the world, but it must be also quite difficult for other reasons that you mentioned before, like for the cost of everything. You know what I'm trying to say? What is the biggest problem?
I'll tell you the truth. The big success about London was also thanks to my partner, because we had two totally different roles and we never interfere in each other's role. He had the role to take care about all the logistic. Every single aspect of the logistic was cared about him. And basically me, I was the one care about all the artistic aspect. So basically, I was the one that chose all the tattoo artists. I was choosing all the different art exhibition or museum or things. And I was telling him what I needed, and he was going to find it and get it ready for the show.
So I'm sure without him, you're not being able to do it, London, without Marcus?
Sorry, I didn't get the question.
So... No, without Marcus, you would have not been able to do London, you mean?
No. I say that he was doing an excellent job.
I'm not saying that
without him was not impossible to do London. But as I say, I never care about any logistic aspect because he was taken care of. Then I had two person that was Nadine and Jez, that were following up all the conversation and everything with Tatur, and they were, both of them, they were totally amazing. And I have also to thank the Club of London, because there were over 30 people working during the convention time, and all of them, they never cared for the money they were taking hourly. Their goal, it was to do the best show on earth. So
on basically
a good count of a fabulous team that everybody was so proud to work for London because it was the best show in the earth.
Thank you, Mickey. By the way, I see Guy is online now. Hi, Guy, how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
joining the conversation.
Yeah. I just wanted to drop in and say, hey, I've got a client who is a few minutes late and he's probably going to roll in any minute, but I wanted to come and say, hey, and I know that there are, Gabe had asked a few people who had actually, you know, attended the London convention regularly to come on and join the show. And they were sort of reluctant. They were like, oh, it's such a sad thing. And,
we didn't get to their part. No, yet.
Of course it is. It's sad when something that you love changes. But first of all, Mickey, I just want to say congratulations on the achievement of actually accomplishing that, to have it be an event that people hold in their hearts like that. That's hard to do. And
thank you so much.
And you know, all the different art shows that you have curated and the book projects and everything else. I mean, you've really been this driving force. And I think that's why the convention was so successful. So instead of being sad about it, I'm excited to hear about what you've got in mind for next.
That I was curious about that too.
Well, okay. Right now, as you know, London, it came to an end.
Yes.
They're not going to be London anymore. The reason, because many people ask why, etc., are basically two. The main reason are two. The first one, it was a lot of things. Like, it was a baby of me and Marcus. And since Marcus disappeared, I was going to feel a little bit awkward to do it again without him. I mean, the feeling to walk on the floor of the tobacco dock without going every hour to see Marcus and talk about things and everything. It was kind of difficult, but probably I could go over it, even if I didn't know how I could do it, but I knew I could go over it. But the main problem was the COVID, because London was such a huge organization that it couldn't be put on hold. Basically, just with storage expensive and website expensive, the two salary of the people that were working, we had to spend around £7,000 every month just keeping on hold.
Well, so and then for one of 2 years, that would be long. So.
Yeah, that would destroy it.
Yeah.
Basically, we arrived to the point to have, because when the COVID hit, the organization of the 2020 convention was already done. So we were already under £120,000 expensive what we paid for doing the show. But the first COVID hit us, and then we were thinking, okay, we keep going, we borrow some money from the bank and everything, and we carry on for 2021. Then in July, unfortunately, my partner died for a heart attack. And then arriving to December, I saw that the company was down almost £200,000. And with the fact that we couldn't even be sure this year to do it, I had to close the company. I did not have any other choice. Because again, it was not possible to put it on hold.
Right. And I think people don't understand about, with events like this, something that people don't understand. They're like, well, you just reschedule. But yeah, it's a continuous operation. It's not just an event.
For a big show, like for many other, they don't have problem. They just wait because they have to pay only the money of the rent of the venue and the booths they pay when they, but London was not like this because, as I say, we had two employees that were working 365 days a year, every single day. And with the storage, with the thing, every month we got almost £7,000-£8,000 every month. So it was impossible to carry on.
That you know, this is the question, or the reason that everybody was probably looking for, you know, why did London end? You know, I mean, it was probably quite understandable to start with. I mean, I had that feeling in mind. But it's good to hear answer, from you, you know.
The short answer of just saying COVID, yes. But the fact that it wasn't just an event, that it was an ongoing production every day of the year.
Of course, yes, of course.
Exactly.
And but you think this is for the time being, this is a definitive thing, or are you seeing later on in a few years or whatever you feel like you do some other kind of events?
I didn't stop. I mean, I love it so much to do in the convention. And I know the tattoo world loves so much what I was doing, but no, it's not the end of my career as tattoo convention organizer.
Okay.
I got so far many different offers, but as I said, if I have my vision for doing a convention, and for me, it's very difficult to find a partner that has the same vision I have. Because as I say, it's not, if I have a partner that wants to do a convention with me for making money, I'm not the good, the right partner for it. I'm the one that wants to do a great show for the tattoo community. So I will see. I will see what's happening. Right now, with still the COVID going on, I don't know how is the situation. I hope in America it's much better than here, but here in Europe, it seems that we don't get rid of it at least till the end of this year. So yes. Right now I'm more focusing on different projects, and I waited to see after the COVID pandemic will be over, what are the chances? Because as I said, they invited me to be partner of different show from Australia to Europe, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm sure I'm going to do something, but still don't know with who or how or when. But for
and
sure,
okay.
I'm going to do something else that will be special as London, but a totally new thing.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people will feel better about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just knowing that you're planning on doing something, I believe that we're going to have to adapt, and conventions in the future probably won't be the same exact setup as they were in the past. And, you know, we might have to be a lot tighter about how many people are allowed on the floor and things like that. This may never go away. And so to be able to navigate through all of that and still give that incredible community, you know, feeling, you know, that's a real challenge. But, you know, I think that there are among the best show promoters in the world, there's enough vision that, you know, that I think the community can be confident that we're going to have amazing shows in the future.
Again. Yeah, but also because if I can say, but first, you know, when I started London, I didn't start, the last edition I had almost 450 tattooers. When I started the first year, there was only 200 tattooers. I mean, I was, one of the way to decide the number of tattooers is because I was always running around the show, not only solving all the different kind of problem, but always look if all the tattooers had enough work. If I see some tattooer not working, not very busy, I was going the year after to take out tattooers. Many times I did year after year convention with less tattooer than the year before, because I wanted to be sure that everybody could work at the maximum. But what I'm trying to say here, sorry, I was on the phone, so a phone call arrived. What I was going to say that a good tattoo convention is not a tattoo convention with 500 artists. A good convention is a good convention with great tattoo feeling, with great experience, with a great thing to offer to the public.
And well, it sounds like you're also very mindful of
a special experience after you left the after you leave the convention.
Yeah, it sounds like you're very mindful about how many artists there are for how much public there is. You know, that's a very careful balance. And I don't know if most promoters would even consider that. They're just going to try to get as many people through the door as they can.
It's a very dangerous game, you know, pushing the limit so much, you know. Some organizers are definitely able to do so in some places of the world. But as you said, Mickey, like you want to make sure everybody works at the end of the day as well.
If I can say, you know, one thing that I found out lately and really amazed me, but as I say, usually I don't like to make names or things, just like amaze me is not the way I'm working. I see that many tattoo convention organizers nowadays, what we do, they invite and even they pay 20 top artists to be there. And then they try to get as many artists as possible to get all the money from the booths, and they don't care if are good or bad or whatever. And even the tattooers that are going there, even if they don't work, they don't care, because they just take photo with a big name, post on their social media and say to their follower, look, I am in this convention working with this big star, et cetera, et cetera. And always amazed me. It's not absolutely what interested me. To me, every single artist that come in the show must has a reason. This is why I was, I think I've been the first one that start many different things. And with London, for example, I was the first one that give single booths and not double. What I mean, if you were going to convention till 20 years ago when I started London, people used to buy a booth, even if they were invited. They had a booth, and usually booths were for two artists. And one artist that was buying the booth could bring whoever he wanted.
Mm-hmm. That's the way it works,
the only one that started to invite, you come and you have only one place for yourself. Not for your partner in the tattoo show, not for your friend, not for your girlfriend that is tattooing, no. Only for you, and you only can work there, because I wanted to have control 100%. And before I started London, I think nobody was doing that.
Yeah, yeah, I think this is a very good piece of information for a lot of organizers, yeah, on how to also manage the artists to get at their shows.
Yeah,
also I'm also because... always surprised when I see too many people in one booth, and officially there's only one sitting there, but then you have three or four, you know, it happens.
No, to still. Me, no. No, if I was finding that somebody was giving the machine to somebody else, I was going to ask him to leave the show. Because I just give you another example. Unfortunately, it happened only one time. But basically, I invited a tattooer, he's a famous tattooer, whatever, ta ta. And then, unfortunately, one night he was a little bit too stoned. And instead of leaving the show, he tattooed one hand, and the tattoo he did was totally horrible. So the customer came to me and he showed the tattoo he did. Basically, I pay him the laser to take it out. I pay him, I say to him, you can choose the tattooer you want, and you do the tattoo and I will take care of it. Because basically, London for me, it was like my tattoo studio. If you have a tattoo studio, you're responsible for every single tattoo that come out from that show, from the studio.
That's,
and the same was for
epic.
Me for London. So of course, the tattooer that did this mistake never been invited anymore, even if he was high and famous, I don't care, he never invited. And at the end, he offered himself to pay the laser, the new tattoo, and this is what he did. But as I said, I was feeling responsible for every single tattoo that was done in London for everybody.
Wow. Yeah, well, you had a vision of nothing but excellence in that show. And, you know, that's part of shoring that up, making sure it happens, keeping that high standard.
Yeah, especially because when you have 450 people, you know, but you don't know all of them personally. So you don't know how professional they are, how much booze they like to drink when they party or what they do. Unfortunately, you cannot control that.
Yeah. And someone's size of their Instagram following might not necessarily be proportional to, you know, how good they are on a day-to-day basis, you know, in doing their tattooing. And, you know, I've sometimes seen, you know, a piece that's circulating and this person's getting a billion likes on it. I look at their profile and that just happened to be their really exceptional piece, and everything else is, eh, you know, and I'm sure people get into shows on the basis of a few, you know, hit singles like that, you know, and that's gotta be a hard thing to screen out.
No, actually London never happened like this, because as I was saying before, if somebody was asking to come, I was not just looking the tattoo. They were sent me by email on everything. I was going to do all the research I could before invited him. So it never happened that I have an artist that maybe was doing a good piece and then the rest not so good. What I was saying that I couldn't have control of the personal behavior of all the tattooers, because many, I didn't know them personally. So I don't know how was the hire of professional ethic they had.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's part of why it's a 365 day operation, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Research like that takes time, you know, from the time somebody has to be involved to the time that they're actually, you know, vetted and ready. I mean, that's a chunk of work for somebody.
No, especially because I wanted to have representation. I got sometimes tattooed from Mongolia, from India. I mean, one thing is very easy to do the research in the country you live, or in, or even in Europe or in America. It's kind of easy, but it's much more difficult to find. Like the last tattooer I found, but unfortunately the convention didn't happen, was Yogi from India. Yogi is doing really amazing and powerful work. For me, it was fantastic. I couldn't wait to show his work in London. Unfortunately, the show didn't happen, but I don't think many people know Yogi from Bombay.
No, I'm not sure.
I think I've seen his profile.
Yeah,
but
I did an article on him and promote him a few times on my Instagram. But what I was saying, that my research was all over the world, from Chile, from Colombia, from India, Argentina, everywhere, because I wanted to have people from all around the world to represent their country.
And all possible tattoo styles as well, as far as I can see.
Handpicked. Now, that's part of what makes it a great show, or made it a great show. Somebody could walk around the entire floor and they would see the best of everything.
Exactly. That's, I think, the biggest legacy you can leave behind after the London show, you know? This kind of...
No, absolutely. As I say, I wanted that it was represented the... Like when I was choosing tattooer, many times, if I had already, I don't know, 80 tattooer excellent in traditional or in new traditional, and I was getting a new one, but still doing the same thing, I was, no. Also, that was another thing of choosing artists, but there are so many new artists now that technically are totally perfect, but how many are innovative? I mean, so many times when I see the black and gray artist, it's so boring because you see the tattooing perfectly in technique, but as subject, all the same, copied and copied and copied and sold 1,000 times. So to me, if I have an artist who's asking to come to London, that was technically was perfectly, but mind-wise or creativity-wise was not so interested, the answer was no. Simple, because why you should be there, what you have to give to people,
right? So
a dream.
Nothing.
So this is the collection of handpicked artists who are going to be the inspirations for those who are still trying to find their styles.
Exactly. Yeah. It was, I wanted to do like the 3 day of year. Okay, you want to know where the level of tattooing is this year in every aspect, from the hand picking technique, from the resume, from the tatau, from different style with tattoo machine. You come to London 3 days, and after 3 days, you understand where tattooing is.
Mickey, what is it, the styles that you've liked the most in the last few years, that you found the most innovative?
Well, there are many. I cannot speak about my personal style.
Taste.
Because my personal taste is many times go not with what I propose, because I never try to get influenced by my own personal taste. But for sure, I always loved powerful things. Like, this is why I like a lot what Gakin is doing, because he's so powerful. And I know how he stay. One thing I learned from the Le family, that you start to judge a tattoo at least 5 years after it's done. This is why many times I'm laughing when I see photo of people that say healing tattoos after 2 weeks or 3 weeks. I mean, to me, it doesn't mean anything. Show me after 5 years, because this is when you start to understand the tattooing. And if you know how to tattoo, like, for example, Philip does, after 5 years, his tattoo are looking better.
There was somebody who said that the tattoos have to look good 15 days after rigor mortis.
Yeah, Hanky Panky used to say this. I always say as same as well. Absolutely truth, but we all know that after 30, 40 years, if your tattoo seems so long, your tattoo start to fade. But even if it fade, it should fade in the right way and still looking good and actually looking even more mysterious and beauty. It changed its beauty. Like a beautiful woman, if she's getting old, doesn't mean she look uglier. She just change her beauty. And the same happened to good tattooing. Unfortunately, nowadays, not the majority of tattooing I see is not really like this.
Yeah, well, I think that people are really fascinated by how fancy that they can render, right? And the longevity of that kind of thing is you know, obviously very experimental. And, you know, the kind of strong foundation that you're talking about where it ages with elegance, you have to sacrifice something in the short term, right? The pieces that you're posting on Instagram might look simpler and might not look as fancy. And, you know, of course, there's going to be a nice middle ground in there, too. And I think, like you're saying, once you've been tattooing 5 years, if you're seeing your clients coming back, you're just going to get better as a result of looking at your old work and how it succeeds or fails.
Absolutely, yes.
Some artists have not been around for 5 years, you know, and I do already some very, very good job. They have no way to see how it will look like in 5 years because they have not been around
so
long.
Yeah, but now, I mean, it's like, I hate it. You have no idea how many times, especially when I was choosing London, but even tattooer, I want to have an article that especially the realism tattooer that they send me basically not even real tattoos. And I'm not even talking about filter. I'm not even talking about Photoshop, but many times now, especially I have to say the Latin from South America, but I got few times from them. Basically they do a realistic portrait and the photo they send me is in Photoshop, they put the tattoo on top of the real photo.
I can't believe that they send this to you.
They sent this to me. But I tell you, many times, if you don't know, the first time you thought like, wow, this is so excellent. How can be truth? And then you enlarge the photo. And I needed a long time to understand it was a Photoshop trick. But this is make you understand how fucked up are so many people. That I always talk with Philip, and unfortunately, I believe what he's saying, I believe the same, that tattooing in the last 5 years is living the biggest lie he ever lived.
What we see is not real.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah,
and unfortunately, for example, there was one time I met in a tattoo convention in Italy, a customer of a guy that I never invited in London. He's very famous and everything, but he uses all the time Photoshop. And I recognize a customer of him, and I asked him to show the tattoo he did on him because I was curious to see the real. And the guy just take out the mobile phone and show me the photo on his phone. And I say, no, but I want to see in real. And he look at me and say like, no, you can see from here, this is what I have. And he refused to show me the actual tattoo. And I'm talking about the customer. So I don't know, the kind of brainwash or no idea.
Yeah, I think this is a radically different situation than 20, 30 years ago. I mean, it's a different world. I mean, yeah, if you experience how it was before.
It's kind of fallen prey to consumer culture. You know, people really love the next shiny new thing. And not everybody who's looking at tattoos on social media is educated about it. And, you know, of course, we've got, you know, people like Tattooed Tooth Fairy that post real photos of these things next to the original photos that the artist posted, so you can see. And in some cases, like, oh, wow, that actually looked pretty good. Other cases are like, oh, my God, that's not even the same piece. And people need to see this. They, you know, unfortunately, without running into some disappointments themselves, I think a lot of these folks, they don't see any reason not to believe it.
Well, yeah, I mean,
because then you have people like, I really appreciate one time Nick Hurtado, he posted a photo about Joker with no filter and everything. And you could see, yes, it was not shiny with like the filter. It was an amazing and stunning tattooing. So I'm okay if people use sometimes filter and everything, but I'm not okay with them, with so many that they really go beyond that.
It's okay to improve the photo, right? Like by making the contrast in the photo, which might be washed out, look like it actually looks in real life. It's not okay to improve the tattoo in the photo, right?
Yeah.
That's the difference, you know? I mean, sometimes I'll remove distracting backgrounds and things like that, but the tattoo itself, I'm not gonna be like, oh, I can make that line look a little bit better real quick. Because I know somebody's going to see that piece in real life, you know. I don't want to be called out for bullshitting, you know. Plus, I just don't like to do that. You know, I always try to just post really raw photos all the time. Bad glare and
I
all.
I think that should be the only way to post pictures.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was. I can tell you this thing. It was amazing to work with Philip for the book I did, and I think it was the best book I ever did. I worked 2 years for make that book. Mm. Basically, so many times he had the perfect photo. I mean, we all know Philip never used any filter. And he got perfect photo of a back piece, just finishing everything, but he was trying to get every customer after 4 or 5, sometimes even after 6 years, retake photograph after 5 or 6 years. And he wanted to have the photo of the tattoo that aged so long, but he preferred than have the fresh photo that was looking too bright for him.
Wow. For him, so that after 5 years thing. For him, that's a real tattoo after 5 years.
Yes. So he tried all the time to put a photo that were healed at least after 2-3 years. And he recalled so many customers from Switzerland for retake photograph for the book project, because in the beginning he had just fresh photos. And he wanted to show the real thing, because for him, photo take about a tattoo that just finished, even with no filter and nothing, is not realistic.
Yeah. Well, and Philip was telling me about how, you know, he was enjoying judging contests at conventions for a while there, because he felt like he could kind of pick through the bullshit. This piece might look really nice right now, but he's like, this is going to look like shit in 5 years, so I just can't vote for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a tough one with the realism crowd, especially, you know, there definitely is a way to do a long lasting realism tattoo and to do it properly. You know, and of course, Nico is a great example of that. He's always been putting a strong foundation in his realism. And you know, if you were to eradicate all the color, you would still be able to recognize who it is. But of course, he's been at it a long time. You know, he's seen the stuff heal. And he's humble enough to say, okay, I want to keep improving this.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you.
How do you think tattooing will evolve in the next 10 years because of social media and stuff like that?
This is a very, very difficult question, because I think all of us, if we were thinking 10 years ago, we were expecting tattooing was like this today, I think none of us. So I think it's very difficult to tell you even where Tatooine will be in 5 years, because things are changing so quick. I never saw Tatooine. One thing that I'm kind of sorry, I never saw Tatooine so popular, but I never saw, this is the contradiction, it's so popular, but there is such a lack of culture of tattooing.
And so that makes it sad. I mean, it's so popular, but
it's very sad for me. It's sad for me that all the new tattooer, all the people that got even full sleeve, back piece, bodysuit, they are not interested in the culture of tattooing. They're not interested in, to know our history. They don't care. They don't care.
No, it's, I think it's a race of getting tattooed as fast as possible.
Yes, and for tattooer, just now it's not important anymore. Like, I give an example. There was somebody working in my tattoo studio that I fired, and I was trying to teach him or her, doesn't matter, what was his luck and how he could improve his work. So I was showing different way how he could improve and everything. And when I was not there, he was just saying like, but why me? He's continued to break my balls talking how I could improve and everything. He should invite me in Paris convention, in London convention, so I will be more famous, I will make more money, I will be more popular, and he will earn more money from me as well. So it's really old and stupid. And unfortunately, I know many tattooers think like this, like instead of be more good for them is and then improve their work, they try to find the way to get more popular. Is this what is really important for them right now?
Being humble is not a thing anymore.
But then it's not a question of being humble, for sure. But even if you're not humble, usually in, we want to improve every day in what we're doing. We want to get better every day. We want to work better today than 1 year ago. But they don't seem to be many of them. I'm not saying everybody, of course. I don't want to say this for every single new tattooer. But a lot of them, it seems that the most important thing is getting popular, not getting good and better year after year.
Which are two very different things.
Yeah. How much popular they are in the game more than how good they are in the game.
Yeah, well, I think that's why you see some very flashy tattooing. It's very predictable. They're like, that got a lot of likes, I'm going to do something like it. And, you know, that's probably driving, you know, a good half of the tattooing that's being, you know, posted right now is people just figuring if that's popular, I'm going to mimic it.
Yeah.
But will this kind of tattoo artist last anyhow over time if you have this kind of mentality?
It depends. Depends, because many times they stay for long, I have to say, because as I say, we used to know 20 years ago, even 15 years ago, but if you wanted to stay, you had to be popular in some circuit that were magazine, convention. Now you don't need anymore really a tattoo magazine or a tattoo convention to get popular. And many times I see so many people very popular, but they're fully booked and there is no explanation of that, except because maybe they tattoo a famous rapper or because they've been somewhere. They judge more for the character of the tattooer, not anymore for the work they're doing. And this is very sad.
Well, and also some people, especially the young ones that don't have kids yet, they can really learn to play the social media game in such a way to get those numbers inflated. And, you know, that ultimately is going to filter into actually people getting tattooed by them. And yeah, again, they don't need the old infrastructure, the conventions, the magazines, the, you know, getting
even the TV shows.
More established artists. Yeah,
yeah, well, also because I have to say that, for example, London, all the majority of people that came to London as visitor, they knew about tattooing. They have a fundamental culture about tattooing. Of course, there were even visitors that came just to see, but I know that a lot of them, they knew about history. We are talking about the majority of people that don't care to go to tattoo convention, that they just follow artists through Instagram and everything, and they judge the quality of people not through their work, but through the number of followers. Because unfortunately, as I said, in the past, you could choose a tattoo magazine, or even if there were different magazines, everybody was trying to do the work of educate people the best they could. Somebody could do it better, somebody could do it not so good, but at least that was the goal everybody had. Now, not anymore. Like, for example, I refuse. Sometimes I see, even if I don't care personally, I don't follow, sorry, personally, the page of Tattoo Life in Instagram, but my guys, they have, they know that I absolutely don't want to, that they publish tattooing that are just spectacular. Like, for example, I see a tattooer, and that was another reason. It was very good, but I never invited anymore in London, because he tattooed a young kid of 21 years old, like all the teeth of a skull through all his face. And this kid has just few little tattoo and then half face tattooed. So this tattooer that did that, I never invited anymore in London, even if he used to come in London. When I saw that, I never wrote him to say why or not. I don't care. I just didn't want it him anymore. Of course, his post got over 10,000 likes. So many profiles that are not owned by tattooer, but for people that kind of want to teach the culture of tattooing, post it and everything. I would never post a photo like this, because I hate to be spectacular just to get more like. It's not what my goal is. But unfortunately,
that's being spectacular in a wrong way. I'm sorry. I wouldn't do
course,
it too.
Right,
as a publisher. I would not encourage this kind of things.
I remember when we didn't do face tattoos because we felt so protective of tattooing that we didn't want to give the wrong impression. And now somebody would give a face tattoo to get a bunch of likes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. This is what I refuse. I even refused so many times to even publish model cover in my magazine. If I had tattoos on their face, no, I'm not was going to publish. I don't want to promote that. But because I still believe I did my neck when 2 years ago from Philip. So after 3 years in my business, I did my neck. I didn't, my head are still clean. I mean, I still believe, even if I have 90% of my body tattooed, everything except my face and hand. And I still believe in this. And I don't want to.
I thought I respect it.
Yeah.
And it will bring more visuality and everything, I don't want to promote it.
Yeah, I think that it's fine for somebody to arrive at facial tattoos once they've done their, most of their body and they're clearly decades into it. But yeah,
you make that
judgment because this was a young, 21-year-old who got it. They didn't arrive at it that way. It wasn't part of a long journey of getting tattooed and knowing what it means to wear tattoos. And I mean, I've had my hands tattooed for a long time and it's never been a thing. You know, I don't hide the fact that I'm tattooed, but I haven't done my neck yet because I've got a school age kid. And while I'm trying to sit there and talk to the principal, they're staring at my neck, and
exactly.
I still want their attention. So yeah, I'll arrive there. I will, I don't know if I'll arrive at the face, but I don't want to say that it's wrong for people to do that because I've seen some really, cool facial tattoos. But it really is not something you should be doing for those reasons.
I totally agree with you. Like, for example, when Philip tattooed the design of Felix on Paul Boots, of course, he earned it to have it.
Yes.
And many people earn to have the right to have their face tattooed. I absolutely agree. And doesn't matter if you're a tattooer or not even tattooer, but if they live the whole experience, they know what they to expect and they're fine with it, perfect. I just hate all these young kids that we all talking about, that has lettering all over the face, like the trap thing and everything, without having nothing else.
It's the thing to be able to earn a living by tattooing the face and go on Instagram and and then try to become famous like this. I think it's very sad too. I'm very happy you're saying these kind of things, because I had an issue with that personally. And I found it very sad what was going on lately. I'm very happy that you two guys are pretty much on the same track as well. And Mickey completely. So I think this is something that should be discussed maybe sometimes a little bit more. And again, not for the older guys, which have been around for decades, but when you're 20 and you do something like this, which is a very radical change in your life. It's a lot of people don't even dare to argue about that. But
as I say, now that a lot of tattooer doesn't make a proper apprenticeship anymore, so there is nobody that is telling them what
that's a problem, the lack of ethic.
A tattooer, actually, when they see a kid, many of them that want the hand or face, they're even happy to do it because they know their photo will get more like on Instagram and they get more popular. So it's even this, that you can even find tattooer that even encourage them. I'm talking about young tattooer, of course. And this is sad.
It is. I totally agree with that. And what's your take about that? I see you have maybe mixed feelings about this.
Yeah, I mean, I try to have mixed feelings about most issues, because I know there's different sides to it, and I'm only going to see my own perspective. But I like the fact that I can tell you the person who taught the person who taught me. You know what I mean? There's a lineage. You know, my boss was, he apprenticed under Cliff Raven, who was an incredible tattooer. I got into the tattoo industry by him taking me to a convention and introducing me to Jack Rudy and Kerry Barba and Edda Hardy. And so I had this mentorship that, even though he had his own problems and it was difficult to work for him sometimes, of course, it's classically been a rocky road. If you want to become a tattooer, you're going to end up apprenticing in a dodgy situation. But it's changing now, right? Now we've got it's softened up a little bit, right? And maybe that's not such a good thing. I don't know. But in terms of earning each of these levels of, you know, not just in terms of whether you're going to get your neck tattooed. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with a person who's committed themselves to tattooing, to getting a neck tattoo. But I still think that they're going to get a better neck tattoo if they wait and, you know, get other tattoos first and really learn about themselves and make some mistakes and get some of that laser work done and all that. And then they'll get their neck tattoo and it'll be way better. You know what I mean? The more time you spend in this industry, in this culture, in this community, the better all of these things get. And the more you're going to appreciate it. And so if you come into the industry and you've already got art skills, and that used to be a hard thing too, people would get into the industry without art skills, most people, right? And so it was a strange competitiveness. And now somebody can come in with stellar art skills, pick up one of these newfangled machines and cartridges, do amazing tattoos that look great on Instagram in the first 6 months, and they're not going to have any sense of perspective. And I think it was even hard for me, because I was one of the few people in Chicago who had pre-existing art skills. And, you know, I let it get to my head. And, you know, I thought I was the biggest freaking rock star for a while there. It took some hard knocks, you know. I'm 33 years in now. And part of it was seeing things that I thought were the most amazing tattoos come back 5 years later and go, oh, okay. And part of it was just living the life and realizing that you're around a lot of other really solid, you know, incredible contributors, even if they might not be flashy. And you sit down and have a long conversation with one of them or get tattooed by one of them in their studio and get to know about the history, do some guest spots, sit quietly at that big dinner conversation and just listen, even though, you know, you're the guy that just won all the awards at the convention, to just say to yourself, shut up and listen, man. This is important. It takes some years to arrive there. But, you know, if you come in with the right attitude in the very beginning and say, you know, I know that no matter how fancy and flashy my work might look right now, this is the very beginning. And I want to soak this up like a sponge. It's going to make you a happier person because you'll be more invested into this career that you've chosen. It won't just be a thing that you do. It'll be part of a, you know, a thing that you are.
Yes. I mean, my take is it's regarding these face tattoos. It's, if you are like an artist, it's probably okay. You know, like my point, and I think Mickey's point is for these young people which are getting these kind of tattoos when they're not, they don't even work into tattooing. They just, I don't know, right. They're just doing something else completely. Well, if you're tattooing, yes, I'm with you completely, 100%.
Right. There are rappers and people like that, you know, pop culture icons that are getting face tattoos. And so the really young kids whose friends
doesn't matter. Tattoos,
right. Yeah. It's like, it's you know, fortunately, we have lasers and a lot of this stuff will come out okay, you know, and as long as they don't get it in purple or blue, they'll be able to get a laser back out again if they come to their senses. I don't know. I think that people have always been at liberty to destroy their lives, you know, long before facial tattoos were around.
Sure. Yeah, who are we to say what they're supposed to do?
We should hope that the people that we're doing could told about the risk about it.
Yeah,
consequences.
Now, unfortunately, I don't see many people talking even about that.
I don't think most people care at all.
No. They know it's going to get them a lot of likes. It's going to be a popular post.
Here's
a hot chick that wants something on her jaw. This is going to get me 10,000 likes, you know. It's
going
to ruin her life, but, you know.
That's the most important thing. I mean, last week I saw something that really blew my mind. That's about a girl, which she removed her nipple. You know, she had some big, giant boobs. So that she could post her boobs on Instagram, because with a nipple, she couldn't post it. So she removed the nipple so that she could post on Instagram. That blew my mind. I'm like, that's insanity.
I know, people are crazy, but
you're now officially an Android. Wow.
They never explained to her that it exists Photoshop and you can take out the nipple in Photoshop.
That was crazy. Anyhow, Mickey, I think we're getting to the end of this this awesome conversation. I mean, I could keep going for a very long time with you guys. Is it something about London that you still want to say to the people that are watching us today?
The only thing I would like to say that London was possible only thanks to all the support of the tattoo community. Without the tattoo community, I could never do anything. So it's not me that make London, but London was done by all the artists that in 15 years they came and support my work. London was them, not me. Me, I was just the little cooker of the show, but are the tattoo artists that make London so incredible.
Mickey,
and by the way,
thank you.
You've always been one of the five guys that I miss in London, I have to tell you. Now that I have a chance to talk with you.
All right,
how did it happen? Mickey, thank you so much for being us today, with us today. I really, really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
It's an incredible piece of history. Really important piece of history. And thanks again.
I hope we're going to see more of that.
Yes. The world is waiting.
Thank you very much.
You're too young to retire anyhow.
No, for sure. I want to.
From conventions.
Wait. Something better is coming up.
There you go. Awesome. I think a lot of people are waiting for that already.
Thank you
so much, guys. Gabe, do you have anything to add? You still there?
I am still here. No, that was amazing to hear. And it was hard not to chime in and be like, yeah, I agree. Woohoo. you know, the London show definitely helped me catch up with some people that I wouldn't have had the opportunity to. So a lot of, mostly I just want to say thank you on behalf of half of all of what I'm doing, because that show definitely brought together the, I was saying, it's like not even just the mountaintop, it's like the mountaintops of all of the different ranges. And it's very exciting. I'm very excited to see what you do next too, because it's, I imagine that you've got a lot of creativity that you're going to need to get out, because there's a lot of people behind you. Anyways, thank you. That was great.
Thank you very much.
The world is watching. Thank you, guys.
All the best. Bye.
Goodbye.
You guys take care.
You too.